Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for episode 53 of Pepperdine People. I'm Kathy Thomas Grant, and I'm joined here today by Peter O'Not, Scottish playwright, and John Kilty, Scottish composer, actor, and our musical director for our exciting play that we're taking to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this summer in 2012. First off, let's just start off talking about the play and the topic of the play.
The play is called Why Do You Stand There in the Rain, which is it's named after a Woody Guthrie song, which is the opening number, which we're performing actually today. We're doing our special recording for the National Theatre of Scotland, who we are sending our sample of our stuff to their website. So that'll be available online from, I think, May 1st. So just watch out for that one. Anyway, this is a show that I have been working on this or thinking about this story for like 30 years. Yes. But I've never had the opportunity has never really come up because it's a big story that needs music, and it's about an American subject matter, which is something you may or may not have heard of from high school history of the Depression, which was what's something called the Bonus Army. And in 1932, somewhere between 25 and 35,000 World War I veterans arrived in Washington, D.C. to try and get a bonus payment. They were what was called adjusted service compensation. They were had been promised, as guys who'd fought in the First World War, that they would be paid this bonus that would compensate them for lost wages. It came to $625 each. If they'd served overseas, that's all it was. There were quite a lot of them, so it added up to quite a lot of money. But this was 1932, and the government thought, well, you know, they were trying to cut back spending. This is the Hoover administration before Roosevelt. I mean, this was actually, it all happened in an election year, just like this year. That's why it's very exciting. And what happened was these guys came to Washington and had their protest. They did their march down Pennsylvania Avenue. Strangely enough, in the opposite direction from the direction the same guys, a lot of them, had marched in after the First World War. They'd marched one way up Pennsylvania Avenue with their victory parade.
Yes.
Now they marched the other way down Pennsylvania Avenue to the Senate to say, you know, pass this bill, give us our bonus. And they were thanked for doing their protest, and thank you for, you know, taking part in the democratic process. You can go home now. And they didn't go home. They occupied Washington. So this is nothing new, folks. This has happened before. And they occupied every public space in Washington. And like I said, there were 35,000 of them. And they came from all over the country in little... do you understand that to do a play about this, I had to have an American cast, and I had to have quite a big American cast. And I've been trying for years to get this show on. And finally, thanks to Kathy and Pepperdine and their drama program, I've got the chance to do it. And it's fantastically exciting. And it's great to be here to work on the show with the students.
Yeah, I think it's really good for the students to be working on it as well, given what's going on in the country now with Occupy Wall Street and just bringing into their consciousness what it means to protest, what it means to stick up for something that you truly believe in, that you truly believe that you deserve. John, talk to me a bit about you. I ran into you or saw your work in the summer of 2010 in Douglas Maxwell's Decky Does a Bronco.
That's right. And I caught both your productions, The Fastest Woman Alive and...
Language of Angels.
That's right.
Yes.
I saw both of those productions, C venues in Chamber Street, where we were going.
To be this summer, yes.
So it was lovely to bump into you again.
Yeah, and I know when we were talking about this project, I hadn't remembered that we had had that encounter at C venues.
And halfway into the discussion, I said, didn't we meet?
It's a very, very small
world.
Like,
oh, my word!
It is. It's a very, very small world. But it's hotter on this side, and I like it more. I worked with Peter last year on a week's workshop on version of The Cone Gatherers, which is a wonderful Scottish book. And at the end of that, Peter mentioned that this was happening and that you might be getting in touch. And I thought nothing of it until you did get in touch. So it's very surreal to be here, and it's lovely. And what's amazing is... the kids are so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do. I mean, we had a run through yesterday afternoon of the first couple of scenes of the show, and it was just fantastically exciting for me. I mean, and because they sing, especially the way they sing. British people don't sing like Americans. I don't know what it is. There's something maybe, and I don't want this terrible cliches about British reserve and buttoned upness, but Americans seem to sing standing on both feet with their chests wide open.
It was such a fool sound.
It was great.
tears to her eyes. It's
wonderful. Yeah. They're very emotional songs. I mean, and
they are.
And to hear them sung, and to be sung, I think, and again, with real passion by those young people was
and,
really...
And this song in particular, Why Do You Stand There in the Rain, there are no recordings of it. Now, there are obscure recordings of songs I've written on YouTube, right? You cannot find this anywhere. Right. And I find that very interesting.
Yeah, I've been singing the song for years. In the 1980s, in my folk singing days, I had a brief kind of round. Actually, it was during a prolonged industrial dispute, the miners' strike, as a matter of fact. I sang quite a lot during that, and I've sang some of these songs. I sang that song, so I have my way of singing it.
Is this your arrangement of that song?
Pretty much, yeah.
That's pretty cool because the only reference the only version of it we can find is, I keep forgetting his name,
Pete Seeger.
Pete Seeger sings a small part of it, and the melody would suggest perhaps his version was different, but I really like Peter's version.
Yeah, it's great.
Very rousing.
It is. And throughout this week, these 3 days that we've been workshopping this play with the kids, their whole, it's a new way of working for them.
Sure, yes.
And it's been so good for them.
I think for most of the time, drama students in whatever context are going to be working with texts that are tried and tested and proved, that have been professionally produced, that have been done. This one never has. The first audience member in the history of the world to see any of this show was the stage manager's pal who sat and watched the run.
Yeah.
She's the first audience for this play has ever had, and apart from us, who were in it, and we don't count. So it's a very exciting thing. I mean, it's an inherently different process when you're working on a new play. But a new play, particularly of this one, because it's so much based on documents, and it's based kind of a newspaper theatre, I suppose would be the nearest thing you could describe it as, in that it's really taking things that already exist, but little bits of interviews, little bits of contemporary accounts of this event. And I've written tiny little fictional things that feed through it and give it a story and emotional core, I hope. But the main body of the text is not mine. The main body of the text is from newspapers and from interviews and from all sorts of other sources. But it is the most extraordinary and largely unknown and untold story. Although it's straight, because I've mentioned this to a number of people here, and they've sort of looked at me and gone, one or two people vaguely remember something about it. But most people don't remember anything. But the thing that everyone knows about, of course, is the GI Bill. But the GI Bill at the end of World War II, which of course had such an enormous benefit to so many lives, with the returning soldiers from World War II, college education, there were loans, there was subsidized things for housing, for health, for all those things. That all came about because of what had happened in 1932 to the previous generation of guys who came to Washington to demand some of these same kinds of rights and got turned out of Washington violently by the National Guard. And in a sense, the national shame of that event, I think, contributed both to its kind of disappearance from history and also to the GI Bill as kind of compensation. So these guys came to Washington to fight their cause, and they won, but 13 years later.
Right.
And not for themselves, but for the next generation of soldiers.
That's one of the things we were talking about with the actors this week. And I remember something very moving in rehearsal when Ryan Napier, who is the only African-American in our cast, how we were talking about why you're doing this play, what does this particular play, the Bonus Army play, mean to you?
Yeah.
And he recounted that story of his grandparents coming from the South and standing up in Heroes Garden and looking out over the Pepperdine campus and saying, my gosh, I cannot believe that my grandson is here. And his statement was, I'm living the dream
of my grandparents.
Yes, because we have a section in the play where the guys all wrote personal statements. And I then condensed their personal
brilliantly
statements.
Thank you.
And that was Ryan. So I'm living the dream of my grandfather is now his part of personal statement. So the show opens with not just the song, but also the personal statements. And it's... Watch the video
on
YouTube.
You'll see it.
Yes, yes, yes. No, I think this is—it's very exciting. You know, we did sort of turn around to each other a little bit and think, "Ooh, this feels like this is quite good." And we've only been working on it for 3 days, so we have to actually come off our cloud now because we're about to go back into rehearsal. And I'm coping with things like we have a 90-minute slot in a small venue at the Edinburgh Festival, and I have to make this script fit. And right now, I don't think it's going to. I'm going to have to do some cutting.
Yeah, I get that sense too. It's very rich. It's very rich material.
And just
moment-to-moment work is...
Yeah. The next big exciting thing is that we're getting to host not only... We in Scotland are repaying hospitality, in a sense, in that we are getting to host 28 students from Pepperdine, plus staff coming to support, Is it six or eight weeks?
Eight weeks.
8 weeks in
Scotland. We spend a week in the Highlands in Glenelg, and we'll do some rehearsals there and learn a bit about the history of the Highlands. And then we'll spend 4 weeks in Glasgow at Strathclyde University is where we'll lodge, and we're going to rehearse at the
Royal Conservatoire of Scotland.
Yes.
They've just changed their name.
Yes.
The Royal Conservatoire of Scotland is where you're rehearsing.
And then we'll head into Edinburgh at the end of July and load into some venues and perform.
We're looking forward to welcoming you and to. I think it'll be a memorable trip, and I think everyone will have a good time.
Always since this trip, every time we get to Scotland, we usually spend a month in London, but because of the Olympics, we're avoiding London this year. But always at the end of this trip, the students are like, I love Scotland. Why didn't we spend more time in Scotland? And so this will be there'll be no other program, Edinburgh program like this one. I'm very pleased that this has all come together.
Yes, absolutely.
And we'll say, be careful what you wish for.
Scotland's great. You know, it's not that dangerous. It's fine.
It's a beautiful country.
It is.
Beautiful.
It isn't quite as warm as this one at that time of the year, but there you go.
Well, thank you for joining us. And
thank you.
I look forward to seeing you in an hour.
Back to work.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. Thank you so much,
Not
Peter and John.